Yehoshua Perek Bet. If we were to break Perek Bet up into parts, how many parts are there to Perek Bet?
Three. One.
Right, it's probably just one.
I said three if you were pushing it.
No, I'm saying you could definitely break it up into smaller components, but you can even see, like we talked about, in terms of always looking at the Petuchot and Stumot, it's all one block paragraph, and it's actually telling one pretty linear narrative story. Now, in your charts, it could be that you want to break that up into smaller psukim or subheadings, but really there's you know, on a simple level, just one straight story happening here. If we were to give, a simple name to the story, we'll get deeper in a moment, what would we call the story?
Meraglim and
Rahab. Rahab and Meraglim.
Meraglim's story at the wall.
Right, story. Something having to do with Rahab and Rahab, maybe a spy mission of some sort. Rahab is definitely incredibly important to that. Let's start with Rahab and herself. What are some themes, words, general ideas that seem to be consistently coming up in this parak?
Promises.
Key ideas, phrases, any themes you caught?
Cheresh.
Fear.
Meaning when Rahab talks about the fear of the people in Canaan, okay? And the only character who really basically goes by name in the story is Rahab, which is also interesting. The goal here is for a quick wrap-up of each parak, so we're going to do a quicker wrap-up. There's a lot to talk about here. First of all, just in terms of chronology, this parak is odd. All of the Mefarshim attempt to deal with the chronology of Perek Bet, because if in last parak, in Perek Aleph, Yehoshua tells the Shotrim to go and say, prepare yourselves to cross the Jordan in 3 days. This story takes longer than 3 days. So assumably this parak takes place before Parak Aleph. So already we're being told that chronology is not significant here. What's significant is the placement of this parak as Parak Bet, because it's supposed to be Parak Bet. It's here for a reason that has nothing to do with chronological order, according to most Mefarshim. It's very hard to finagle a way that this would be happening either parallel to or post Perek Aleph. If that's the case, the question then becomes, what is Perek Bet doing here? And if we start to think about the beginning of the Sefer, we're going to in two weeks go into Perek Gimel and Dalet, really that's the beginning of the Sefer. Meaning, what's the first thing that Yehoshua is charged to do? What's his goal? Why is Yehoshua here? What's he got to do first? Go into land, got to cross the Yarden, right? That's where we assume the story would begin. We ended off at the Yarden. He's told, Kum, Avor, Tayarden, Hazeh, go and cross the Jordan. I would want Perek Aleph to be the crossing of the Jordan. What that then indicates is that Perek Aleph and Bet are somehow setting the stage for the entirety of the Sefer. Perek Aleph we saw doing that in terms of it setting the stage really for all of Nevi'im, certainly for Sefer Yehoshua and Yehoshua as a character. From the transitions we talked about, it's the transition chapter of Moshe to Yehoshua, Midbar to Eretz Yisrael, Torah to Nevi'im, Torah Sheba'al Shebichtav to Torah Sheba'al Peh, all of these transitions that were taking place that were embodied in Perek Aleph. What does Perek Bet do that sets us up in a way that sets the stage for us to then be able to cross the Jordan in Perek Gimel? That's the only way that I can think of to relate to this chapter. Why is it here if it's not chronological? Why is it significant? Why is it important? I think in a really interesting, phenomenal way that only Torah can produce, that only Nevi'im can produce, what this parak is doing is it's asking us a question. And that question is, what does it take to go into Eretz Yisrael? And there's only one historical character who can answer that question for us. Who's that?
Yehoshua.
Anybody else want to take a guess?
Kalev.
Who else is in the story?
Pinchas.
And then Bathsheba says, wait a second, none of those people were mentioned in the story. The only person named in the story was Rahab. Yehoshua appears sort of kind of in the beginning and the end. Kalev and Pinchas are identified as, by Chazal as the two Anashim, which are said in this parak. And remember how we talked about how Yehoshua was suppressed on a text level in Chumash? And I said, wait a little bit and you'll see what I mean by being suppressed on a text level. Watch what just happened here. Kalev and Pinchas, who are huge characters in Chumash, are clearly intentionally suppressed by the text. They're the ones who are the Meraglim according to Chazal. And the text is intentionally not mentioning them. I think all in an attempt to highlight Rachav as much as possible. What does Rachav mean?
Wide.
Please don't worry, I'll just go for it. Yeah. Sure. What?
Wide.
Well, could mean wide, but considering the fact that Chazal assumed that she was one of the most successful harlots on the face of the planet, I don't think it's actually commenting on her figure per se. So what does Rachav mean? Is that more a bigger definition?
Wider definition.
Is it like we're called? To expand. Lecharchiv is to expand. Rachav is about expanding here. About harchavat, I think, harchavat hadat. How do we open things up? Rachav is an unbelievable character. What I think she's doing is she's showing us the opposite of the experience of Bnei Yisrael and what they experienced up until now, and showing us the opposite way, the way to be if you're going to be a person who's going to enter the land. She's taking us from a place, what's our, with our last Meraglim story. In the last Meraglim story, what happened? We had people from Bnei Yisrael go into the land. They came into the land with their narrow, limited perspective. They imposed their narrow and limited perspective onto Eretz Yisrael and therefore came back with a negative report about a very positive land. And because they couldn't break out of that narrow perspective, they were stuck in the desert. Rachav comes along and says, no, it's all about expanding your perspective. It's all about opening up. Seeing things in a broader way, being open to new points of view, not being limited to your subjective perspective. In fact, this whole perek is all about words of movement. Even just in the first few psukim, you have Vayishlach, Vayalchu, Vayavo'u, Ba'u, Vayishlach, Ba'u, Yatza'u, Halchu. It's all about coming and going. If we were to pick a process in Judaism that's about coming and going, that in fact embodies that word, what process, what word might we use? About coming and going, a process internally?
Tshuva?
Yes, the right time of year, people, right? Tshuva. Shav, lashuv, tshuva. To go back and forth. This whole parak is about back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. And Rachav is opening us up to this concept of what it means to be able to do tshuva, to be lishanot, to change. How so? What is Rachav identified as in the perek? A zona, a harlot. Now, that's mind-blowing in and of itself. She's emphasized in this chapter extensively. She's the only person mentioned by name. She's incredibly pious. If you saw those psukim in the center, I mean, incredibly lofty psukim coming from her. Pasuk tet, v'tomer el anashim, yadati ki natan Hashem lachem et haaretz, ki naflai matchem alinu, v'ki namogu kol yoshvei haaretz b'nechem, ki shamanu et asher hovish, v'chulei, all the nations have fallen before you in there, and they're going to be destroyed. Pasuk yad aleph, v'anishma, v'yimaz l'avinu, we heard it, our hearts melted, v'lokam od ruach b'fneish, lo ruach ish b'fnechem, Ki Hashem Elokeichem, Hu Elokim, Bashamayim, Mima'al, V'al'aretz, Mitachat. Right? Halavai, the spies in Shlach, had that kind of perspective. She has an incredible, some of the most, again, the some of the loftiest psukim we're going to see in Sefer Yoshua are coming from Rachav HaZona. How is that possible? She's able to have that broader perspective. Something shifts in her so quickly in this perek. If we think about the words that are associated with her, what's the sign that she gives? That she's, when they go, when they're going to come back to land, that they should save her house? Give me the Hebrew words. All three of them.
Yeah.
Tikvat Chut Hashani. What's a tikva? Right, it's actually a string. She's not hanging hope out the window, but that's exactly the point. There's a double meaning there. She puts string out the window, but yet tikva has a double meaning there. Tikva is hope. Hope for the future, hope for change. What does shani mean?
Change.
No, it doesn't. What does shani mean? Shani means red. Where do we see a chut hashani also appear?
Israel, they put the string around the go and
he... When?
Yom Kippur.
She puts a string, she's putting out a red string out the window as an indication of the fact that she should be saved. Eerily similar to the red string that you tie around the goat on Yom Kippur, which turns from red to white. Now, if we add Chazal into the mix, things get even more interesting. Rashi quotes this. The Oto Chevel, as though it weren't explicit enough, the Oto Chevel, says Rashi in Pasuk Tev Vav, the Chalon, with that very same string, and that very same window, Hayu ha'nu'afim olim aleha. She would put it out, and that's how the people who would come to commit adultery would climb up using that string through that window to commit adultery with her. And she takes that very string, and if it wasn't again yet explicit enough, she says, Amra, Ribono shel olam, because she's suddenly this pious woman, Ribono shel olam, Ba'elu chatati, ba'elu timchol li. With this I sinned, with this forgive me. Brings back ideas, those of you who are in the Nisibot Shalom Shir, the concept of doing tshuva me'ava, moving your zidonot to zichuyot. Clear indications of tshuva overtly coming through here. In terms of her being a paradigm in contrast to Bnei Yisrael, another chazal that Rashi quotes in Pasuk Yid Aleph. Amru, Chazal said, Ein lecha kol sar v'nagid shelo ba'al rachav hazonah. There was no person in the position of political power that was not at one point in a physical relationship with rachav hazonah. Now says Chazal, Uvat eser shanim ha'ita kishayatsu Yisrael Mitzrayim. She was 10 years old when Israel left Mitzrayim. Vizanta kol arba'im shana. Chazal go out of their way to tell us that she specifically was a zonah for all 40 years that Bnei Yisrael were in the desert. She was an embodiment of what Kal Yisrael were going through. Constantly struggling with their relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, straying from God is constantly referred to as adultery throughout Nevi'im. We kept on straying. Rahav kept on straying. But as opposed to Kal Yisrael, that generation that was stuck in the desert for 40 years, that couldn't get out of that perspective, she had the harchavat adat to say, I can make a mistake, but I can come back. I can transform. I can switch that quickly. That in the beginning of a parak, I can be called a zonah. Then in the middle of the parak, I can basically be saying psukim that are almost word for word out of the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim, which is also not stam. Sefer Devarim, which is the book of transition. She's literally drawing from Sefer Devarim. She's helping pull us across the border. And then she's setting the stage to actually cross. How does the story actually wrap up according to Chazal? What does Rahav become?
Yeshua's
wife. Talk about a 180. According to Chazal, Yeshua's wife is Rahav. Which, if we think about that on a spiritual level, what do we say? That a man and a woman are two sides of the same whole. They're two parts of one person. The two people who are the paradigms here of what it means to properly cross the border into Eretz Yisrael are Yehoshua and his better half, Rahav. Yeshua, who's sitting as the paradigm in the tent of Moshe the entire time, learning what it means, and Yeshua bin Nun, using his binah to transform that knowledge in terms of how to take them across the land, and Rahav, the one who's literally sitting in the land from a low place and drawing herself up, and the two of them meeting in the middle to learn, how do you bring together Shemayim Va'aretz? How do you bring together the spirituality and the physicality to raise all up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? How do you both be like Moshe on the mountain and Yeshua on the ground? How do you be Yeshua lives in the tent and Rahav was sitting there in Yericho the whole time, a zonah, able to turn herself around and do tshuva? These are the two paradigms for us that we need before we can enter the land. So much so that, again, she's the only character and the most significant character of the story. I think that again, if you think about the perspective that she's trying to give us, you look again at that pasuk in Yud Aleph, it's at the center of the parak, and I think it's the centerpiece of the parak, where she's able to look at Kalev and Pinchas. of all people, and say, "Vanishma vayimas lavenu ki kama od again od the lo kama od ruach beish mipnechem ki Hashem elokechem who elokim b'shamayim who elokim b'shamayim imal v'laras mitzata." If we just had an eight on there, an eight ode on there, it's the end of our tefillah. It's the end of it's a centerpiece of Sefer Devarim. She's coming from a totally different perspective, a perspective that's meant one's meant to have to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the spiritual and the physical, to be able to see the ability to turn around, to be able to constantly come back to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, no matter how distant he may seem. I think that's the setup that's happening here in Yeshua Perek Bet. The Shabbat Shem in 2 weeks, we'll finally get to cross the Yarden and see what it means to go through the process of crossing itself. We'll take a 2-minute break.